Here we go. Welcome, everyone, to the Champions. Now, here's your host, former Dallas Cowboys great Preston Pearson, number 26, along with co-host Cowboys superfan Nathan Ross. Here we go.
And yes, here we go. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you were here last week for our very special program, our number two episode. It was a great one. We've got an even better one for you today. So stick around, stay here. Let me introduce formally my co-host, Nathan Ross, big time loyal Cowboys fan in California. Nathan, woohoo! Good afternoon.
Hey, hello, Preston. So excited to be here. Got another great show for us, for the fans today. Last week was amazing. With draft day being today and Drew Pearson coming last week, the original 88, coming onto the show and talking about football, talking about the draft and how he was an undrafted free agent and then comes in, shows how he makes the Dallas Cowboys, and then he tells us about his career that ended up becoming into the Ring of Honor, into
and
the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, that's right.
And a Super Bowl champion. So it was such an exciting show last week, but this show is going to be even better because today is the draft. We're us Cowboy fans and everybody's so excited about the draft. So today is that day. And not to mention, we're going to pass it back to you to find out who our amazing guest is. But I'm so fired up for it. I'm just so glad he's here. And I can't wait to delve into this.
And you're right. It's all about the draft. As if you will, folks, the draft. Remember, as Nathan just said, we had a guy who wasn't drafted last week on our show, went on to become all of those things, Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame. We have gentleman who was involved in a critical draft for the Cowboys and for himself. And here is where I want to point out, when you get drafted into the National Football League as a college athlete, you do have some choices available to you. This gentleman demonstrates the choices that you can make and come out looking good, being big
time. He sure did.
In your own right, in your own way. I think he's got a saying that I love. I won't repeat it. I'll ask him about it. So let's just go ahead right now and bring in our very special guest, the Rocket, Raghib Ishmael.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yes, welcome to the show.
This is great, man. This is an amazing setup you got here, man. All right.
Hey, listen, these guys over here at RNPR are super. You can see the setting behind us. They have several studios here. Trey Gillis, who is our producer, has been wonderful.
Yes.
Yes, he has.
Guiding us as we go along here into our third show. We're getting better, and you're going to make us even better, right?
Thank you. Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Again, welcome to the show. Let's start out.
Welcome, Rocket.
The draft is tonight, a little bit later on tonight. And we've been trying to focus in and around the draft and bringing in folks like yourself who, in your case, had a choice, some choices. Let's start out by looking back, way back, starting in high school.
Oh, wow.
Now, you went to Wilkes-Barre.
That's correct. Wilkes-Barre Myers High School.
Myers High School, yes. In Pennsylvania.
That's correct.
Pennsylvania. Okay. Talk a little bit about your football days, your athletic career in high school. I understand you were always fast.
Okay.
Is that where it began, in high school? Were you a track and field guy? Did you always play football?
So for me, if you were going back to high school, the seed had already been planted that I was going to be the next Franco Harris. Before high school even started, hence I wore the number 32. And it was, I felt, divine providence that when my father died, I was 10 years old, my brother was 8, and my youngest brother was, I think, 4. And I just remember we went to live with my grandmother in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Laura mm-hmm. Balknight. Mm-hmm. She was 77 at the time, mm-hmm. and I didn't realize how, you know, advanced 77 was. And I also didn't realize until I was like 37 how much energy it takes to raise a whole bunch of young boys and children. Oh. And so I marvel more and more every day at that happening. We ended up being in South Wilkes-Barre, and that was the school district of E.L. Myers High School. And they had a legendary coach. His name was Mickey Gorm, who actually, I attended Notre Dame later in my football journey. He was a graduate of Notre Dame in the so 60s.
That's where the Notre Dame thing comes into play.
It came into play, but not through him. I didn't even know he attended Notre Dame until I went to Notre Dame. He wanted to be as unbiased as possible if, in fact, I was going to be recruited by other universities. He didn't want to make sure he tainted the water. But he didn't bring the Notre Dame to my attention. My, what would turn out to be my best friend for like 3 years, 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, mm-hmm. his name was Brian DeWire. Both of us were new to the school, to the freshman football team having tryouts. I was though in 7th grade, Brian was in 7th grade, but I was like 2 weeks too old for the Pop Warner team. So the coach that wow. when I went to sign up said, hey, you're 2 weeks too old. You know, they're going to have tryouts over at the high school, and ended up going over there and meeting him. And he and his father was the one that was instrumental in putting Notre Dame in my psyche, planting that seed. And then that's where that came from.
Okay. So what kind of football player were you? Just the football player?
So,
I didn't know you. With speed, you had to be in track and field.
So watch this. A seventh grade, I never had track experience prior to, I ran in the, I think they call it like the Keystone State Games in Pennsylvania.
High school.
In the summer of the seventh grade. And then in eighth grade, I went out for the track team. Prior to that, though, when I lived in New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, I was probably always in my age group. I just remember tying one race, and I'll never forget it. We were outside of we were Muslims at the time, and my father started a masjid, and one of the masjids, the benefits for us was there were always people coming in with their children and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if there were ever any little boys our age, you know, I would size them up. And then my brother he'd be my promoter, and he'd be like, hey man, are you fast? And then my brother would inevitably come and say, hey man, this guy's fast, but you got to race him. So we went from telephone pole to telephone pole. I never lost the race. I tied once, and it was freaking me out that I was running next to this guy, and I kept looking at him as I'm on the way to the, I'm like, how come I'm not leaving him in the dust? And he's right there with me. So that was like my first shock that, hey, there are other people as fast as you. Moving to Pennsylvania, the track came in eighth grade. I ended up being pretty fast, and I remember tying one race with a guy from Valley West who had the body of like, I have the body of an eighth grader. I might've been like 70, 80 pounds. Man, this cat looked like he was about 115. He had little muscles. He had some hair on his chest.
Jeez.
We end up running the race and tying. I remember we both ran 12 flat on a cinder track. And so track was, after that point, oh, I should say this, track was something that I vowed that I would never do again, and this is why. I remember one day coming to practice, and I'm at that point, it was like I knew I was fast, and I had such a chip on my shoulder when it came to anybody being able to beat me. Yeah. So we get to practice, and coach says, okay, today we're going to run a 400. And I'm like, 400, what is the 400? He's like, oh, that's only one time around the track.
Right.
And so I go, how do you run a 400? He says, oh, it's a sprint. You got to go full speed. I was like, oh, man, I got that easy. I'm going to win this race too. So we all line up. We run the race at about 205 meters. I start to go deaf. Like, I've never felt these. I physically couldn't hear anything external. But I could hear everything going on internally. I could hear myself laboring to breathe. I could hear my heart beating like boom, 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 boom.
Wow.
And then I didn't know this, but it was like I started to become afraid because I was like, what is going on? And I felt this excruciating burning feeling start to,
to
come up in my glutes, my hamstrings, and in my quads. I'd never felt that in a sprint before. The only thing I felt was a little winded at the end, but I was like, what kind of dynamic am I experiencing in this strange race called the 400?
Sure.
All of a sudden, my hearing comes back, and I can hear footsteps getting closer to me from behind.
You can hear those.
I can hear the footsteps, and everybody behind me has no business even being close to me in any sprint. So now my pride kicks in. The pain is worse, and at about 300 meters, I see out of my peripheral vision, I'll never forget it, it was Dev Idgunji, Indian cat. Man, I start seeing this out of my peripheral on the side, and in spite of the pain, in spite of the mortal humiliation that I felt like I was about to feel because somebody was about to beat me, I held on as hard as I could. And as long as I could, I fell across the finish line. We ended up tying that race. I'll never forget it. We both ran 66 seconds in the 400.
Wow.
The pain from that was so excruciating. I remember it took me 2 hours to recover because I literally ran full speed as hard as I could. But after that, I said, oh, track is not for me. I will never run track again. And I didn't go off a track my eighth grade
year. That may have been the moment that got you into Notre Dame itself as a football player.
So I never thought about it that way. I will say it definitely played a major part. And put that to the side, you asked me about the football part. My mentality, my and my brother. So in Newark, New Jersey, we were, you remember Fat Albert?
Of course.
And remember when they would play football in the junkyard?
Yeah, I do too.
We had a college hospital that they built where not across the street from us. And essentially, I would come to find out later that if you're ever in a town where they build a college hospital, you need to get out of that town because they build them in a place where the risk of getting got is very, very high. So anyway, we would play football. I lived in the new version of the project. So it was called Georgia King Village. And I remember we would play football every so often, one part of the village against the other part of the village. And it looked just like when Fat Albert and those guys would play. One guy would have an elbow pad. One guy would have a jersey. One guy would have a helmet. One guy would have a mouthpiece. One guy would have cleats. I had corduroy pants. Those are my football pants. Remember corduroy pants from back in the day?
Of course.
And so literally, I remember our mentality was, yo, we got to be tough. And my brother was an Earl Campbell fan. I was a Franco Harris fan.
Yeah, of course.
And I just remember running back was the premier position. Tailback, really. Halfback, they called it back then. But then it started being tailback. I remember I would have the mentality of being physically, and I didn't weigh 100 pounds until the summer. I didn't weigh 100 pounds until the summer before my junior year in high school.
100 pounds.
So just keep this in mind. So I'm a small frame guy. Oh man, I'm Pee Wee Ismail, not Herman. Pee Wee Ismail. Like I'm. But the only thing I have is I do have speed. So I say that to say. I never avoided any. I remember reading how Jim Brown was angry with Franco Harris because Franco Harris was approaching his rushing record, but Franco Harris got smart. Franco was like, I'm not running
run outside.
Nobody.
Yeah, I'm running out of bounds.
I'm running out of bounds to preserve himself. Yeah. But I was like, you know what? I love Franco, but I'm going with Jim. I'm running over everybody and into anybody who comes my way. So that was my mentality. And fast forward, when we got to the point where we could be on a team that wore helmets, it was a badge of honor and courage if your helmet had the other team's colors on it, or you
stick
had
marks.
To have a dent or some type of scratch in your face mat. Like, it was, we felt by having those in our equipment that when we came home, it literally, it felt like, yeah, I'm a man.
That's right.
I felt so, I felt so accomplished. So that was the type of football player that
So your
that
size
I
had
was.
Nothing to do with how you felt. In
oh,
the
no, right. my man, my right. heart was massive. You know, the only time I became aware of my size was when I was on the Raiders and one of the veterans receivers, because I was like, if it came to blocking, man, I'm going full out, and I'm not cutting the DB. It was like, I'm not going, man, we head up and we physical with it. And one of the veterans who ends up being really good, he looked at me, he's like, hey, Rook, you about to cut your life short. You about to, and then I found out later, he didn't want me to do that because he didn't want to do that. So he's like, hey, man, don't be setting a unrealistic standard that somebody's going to expect of me. Let me just go out here and float around. So anyway, that was my mentality. And ended up having a pretty good high school career, good high school coach, and it led to Notre Dame coming in. Well, I gotta tell you the story. Please, don't ask me questions yet. I got to tell you the story. Right. So in ninth grade, they timed us in a 40. Okay. So I ran a 4.7 in the 40.
4.7?
4.7 in the 40 in ninth grade.
Okay, ninth grade. That's
I remember I'm the fastest cat around. All right. Matter of fact, I'm top three in my, 11, 12, 13 year old region. Right. So 4.7. So now, the summer before my junior year, remember I told you I was I finally got to be 100 pounds and everything. The summer before my junior year, we go to a football camp at Syracuse University, which was a big deal because they had the Carrier Dome. Sure. Syracuse was Coach McPherson. They were awesome back. Man, we used to love going to that football. It was amazing.
They had a great reputation.
Oh, man. Yeah. We get in there. And I'll fast forward because I see time is running out. I won't only ask me one question. What the heck? All right. So all of a sudden, we're in the Carrier Dome, and there's about 300 campers, and we're just like cattle running 40s, giving time, running 40s, giving time, running 40, giving time. So I step up, and I run my 40. Coach Edsel and Randy Edsel, Mike Wosick, and I think Ivan Fears might have been they were at Syracuse at the time. They went on to careers and stuff like that. Man, I run my 40. I come back to get my time. Coach Edsel and Coach, either Wosick or Fears, they're looking at their stopwatch. They're staring at their stopwatch with like a face of disbelief. And then I come back and I say, hey, Coach, what's my time? And so he totally ignores me. He looks at the other coach. He says, hey, man, what'd you get? And the other coach goes like, he lifts his head up from his watch. He said,
and they're not believing
nah,
it.
Bro. He said, what'd you get? And they were like, then they both looked at me and said, hey, can you do that again? I was like, oh, okay. So I run back down. I run back down. And the coach who I'm supposed to give my time to said, hey, what was your time? He said, I don't know. They said we have to run again. Oh, my goodness. So I cut back in line. I get up. I run again. So, the decelerate, then you turn around and come.
Sure.
I decelerate, I turn around, they're gone. They're off the field. Now they're on the sideline with all the other coaching staff and the high school coaches and everybody and the parents. And I come over to them, and you remember what, you can, I think, respect this. I remember when we were younger, anytime adults were having a conversation of any type, even if you were in the room, if a young person came in and like was in a, like they're eavesdropping or they wanted to interject, no, hey, you keep your mouth shut when grown folks is talking. You stay in your place. That same spirit is how they rebuked me when I came over to get the information. I was like, hey coach, what did I run? Yeah. Hey man, get out of here, kid. You're bugging me. Like that kind of thing.
Sure.
Long story short, I ended up running a 4.3. And I was like, wait, how
can wow.
That lit him up right there.
That's nice.
It lit me up. I was like, wait, 4.7? And now I'm running a 4.3? How does, man, check this out. I was so amazed at myself. And I'm telling you, when I was young, my ego was so big. I was just like, I remember taking the picture, the team picture, and I had on a tank top. I remember putting my arms behind my back and twisting them and flexing them so it looked like I had really big muscles
on purpose.
Because I'm like, I got big muscles, I weigh 106 pounds, and I ran a 4.3. What? Now what? Anyway, I don't want to
take up
more time, but come on, let's go. Well, what's the next question?
I got a couple things.
Okay.
Out of that. The one I love most is I'm going with Jim. I'm going with Jim. Okay. All right. So we get to Notre Dame.
Yes.
That's a long process there.
Yes.
You got a chance to meet Lou Holtz.
Yes. That was a blessing. Having Coach Gorman High School, having Coach Holtz in college. Yes.
Right. So your freshman year, I believe it was.
National championship.
National championship.
Yes.
1988.
That's correct. 1988. Graduated from high school 88. Entered into Notre Dame at 88, the 88 season, bam, we won it all.
Oh, wow.
So that was awesome. I don't know if you want me to elaborate. If you do, just let me know.
Okay. Rock it. Rock it. I have
one fast question. Right here.
Okay.
Right yes. now.
You got it.
From, what was it, 1988, wow. I guess it was. Look at those.
This,
moments.
Look, man.
Wow.
Bare minimum.
ABC Sports.
Oh, wait, no, this is my sophomore year, 1989. Yes.
Oh, this is the two touchdown returns.
Wow.
This is the two touchdowns.
Yes.
And at this time,
yes,
Michigan
this incredible.
Didn't
that
even let
a
touchdown
well
return
born.
For
38
years.
Rest in peace. We were at the Big House. We went
yes,
up to
were.
Ann Arbor.
Frank Number two,
Jacobs,
Michigan.
Irv Smith, Anthony Johnson, Pat Eilers, Ryan Maholko.
This is
the second one. We didn't expect them. We thought they were going to squib it. To our surprise, it was
not
in
with
air.
Michigan.
Like, what?
There's Rodney Culver.
Yes.
Laid in the way.
My boy. You got that day, right?
Yes.
Two. That was, and you know what? That was so incredible, man. I was.
You know what, guys? Yeah. And at that time, Michigan didn't let a kickoff return for 38 years. At that time frame. So you took back two against the number two in the Big House. What was the crowd like playing in that number one versus number two experience at the Big House? What was that like, Rocket?
So let me collect myself. And the reason I'm saying that is just because seeing those, the guys and stuff in the video.
Wow.
In the...
Brought back
a lot of memories and stuff like that. So,
wow.
Yes.
Anyhow.
I see it.
I'm thankful for having been a part of that.
Yes, sir.
And
that was your time. That
amen.
Was your time.
Unbelievable
hey,
moment.
Hey,
yes, sir.
So,
wow.
So the expectations of going to the Big House were immense. And the expectations were overwhelming because – as far as the crowd is concerned, we had, I think my freshman year, this was hilarious. My freshman year at Notre Dame, the capacity crowd was like 60,000. Mm-hmm. And then on my sophomore year, it was like 62,000.
And then
my junior year, it was like 66,000. And we could never figure out, how is this happening? They don't have any new construction. There was no new construction and anything. The old school wooden bleachers.
Yeah.
And how they were able to achieve a greater crowd capacity was after the freshman year. They just painted over the old seat marks and they painted new and it made them smaller. And I used to think people I used to think people were standing up because they were so excited about the game. But they were standing up because there wasn't any room to sit down. Because the seats were so small.
That game.
Oh, man.
We're going to try to move on here a little
bit. Okay. Sorry. I'm going to get to the question. Here I am. I got to stay focused. Stay focused. All right.
It's so, okay, Rocky.
They said 106,000 capacity. Wow. At the big house. I'm like, wait a minute, 106,000 people can be at a football
massive
in one place.
Unbelievable.
When we walked into the stadium, it was massive, and it was overwhelming. And what was the equalizer was, first of all, it was a tough game, two heavyweights back and forth, and when they scored, we answered. So we scored, they kick off to us, boom, we score. Yeah. They scored, they kick off to us, we score. Yeah. So it's like, oh, wait a minute. And then it quieted the crowd, it made it where it wasn't any longer overwhelming. So that's my answer to that.
Wonderful. Did you silence the crowd? The crowd got silenced, right?
Yes.
When you did it, it was quiet when you did that?
That absolutely happened. Especially after the second one.
Well, you had many, many days like that on the collegiate level at Notre Dame.
What a football player.
You guys went on to win the national championship, 88, 89 years. And eventually, as time went on, you went back and you were inducted into the college
Football Hall of Fame. Yes, sir.
Runner-up to the Heisman, only to Ty Detmer. Should have won the Heisman if you're giving me a vote.
I know him now. I didn't know him then. Like, it wasn't the way college football.
Right.
Everybody can see any game now.
Yes.
But back then, he was – so we in the era where defense and running the ball was king
–
he was killing them with that system out there at BYU, throwing the ball. And he had a pretty massive Heisman moment against the most formidable team in the land in that time, which was the Miami Hurricanes. That was his signature game. And he had – his stats were just – my stats compared to his stats were night and day. His stats looked like the Empire State Building. My stats looked like my house. And so in that regard –
congratulations. Congratulations. Rocket.
You look like you're having
so deserving.
Good time too.
Yes, thank
so
you.
Deserving.
Kindly. Thank
Everybody
you
around
kindly.
You look like they're having a good time.
Oh man,
as well,
it was so fun. And
what
and
year was that, Rock?
That was in 2020, I think. That was like
I think it was 2019.
And there's Darren McFadden right next to him.
I don't remember.
I think it was 2019.
19, okay, 2019.
And when you were awarded that?
Yes.
And so deserving. I think you were the most electrifying player. That's why you were against Ty Detmer. He had all the numbers. Yeah.
Yes, I was just about
but
to say.
You were the most electrifying
player. I had.
No question.
I participated in big moments.
Yes.
And those moments happened to be in the biggest games that we played.
The
his doggone
included.
Stats were he whoever he played, they was getting it. So that from the Heisman standpoint, I just wanted to point that out.
So all of that electrifying
moments
and the big games and the right places led to the NFL draft.
Wow, we got to the draft.
Here it goes.
Guess who? Because of some wheeling and dealing by Jimmy Johnson, the Cowboys were or had the number one opportunity to get
So wait.
And we wanted him, the Cowboys. But, we wanted him.
So watch this. Watch this. I remember. So it was a lot that transpired, and I know it's not. The time is going to be not enough. So there was a lot that transpired I didn't know that the Cowboys were going to have the first pick. Matter of fact,
New England had it.
Originally. Watch this. At the time, that they made me speak to five different teams.
The
NFL. Because you talked about in the beginning, there was a choice. Most guys have a choice. They just don't know it.
Right.
The teams that were going to be the worst team that was going to have the first pick, all of that, whoever those five teams were that was in position for that, they were all calling my people and they negotiated the contract. And the contract was like 5 years, $1.5 million, $400 to sign, and the rest would be prorated over the balance of the 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason that they were calling us was because if you had the potential to be the first pick in the draft, they wanted you to sign the contract prior to the draft. And they were, like I'm saying, they were pushing it because they didn't want what happened with John Elway to happen again because it embarrassed them. Mm-hmm. And he had leverage, though, because he was a professional-level baseball player.
Yes.
So when he was like, I'm going to go play baseball.
He was going
to
go.
He had the leverage to say, I don't want to go to the Baltimore Colts. And so he ended up working it where he can get to Denver.
Yes.
They didn't want that to happen.
Yes.
So they wanted me to sign. However,
yeah, you were working it.
Man, we watched out. So I had an agent, I had an attorney. Shout out to Ralph Wiley, who set all that up for me. And rest in peace as well. I'm in my room. When I say my room, I'm still at Notre Dame. I'm in my dorm room. I'm just going to class, coming back. And I had this answer machine, which I still remember the message that I left on the answer machine to this day. Matter of fact, I think I have a tape of that thing. I used to have, man, I could have been a contender in the music industry. Anyway, so.
Nice.
All of a sudden, I get a call, and it's John Edwards, who was my attorney at the time.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, man, I just got an interesting call. Call me when you get back from class. So I picked up the phone. I called him. He's like, hey, I just got a call from a guy out in California named Bruce McNall.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, okay. And he's like, he wants to meet with you because he has a very interesting proposition.
Now, he's not violating any kind of NFL rules or regulations because he's not involved with the NFL.
Not.
He is.
He is the owner
of the LA Kings.
The Los Angeles Kings. Boom.
Yes, sir.
In LA. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
LA Kings. He had a production company. There was a big movie that he produced. I forget the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the rare collectibles industry.
And he had a lot of.
Oh, he was lavish with the money.
Ooh.
And yes. he had a stable of horses and his horse ratings. And I mean, it was on the highest level. I didn't know any of this, of course. I was just like coming from, philosophy too. And all
in
of a
class.
Sudden,
sure.
we get this. So he's like, hey, he wants to speak with you. He gave me the rundown. We, long story short, get a call from the secretary.
Right.
And she's like, hey, we're going to send the whatever. No, she said, the car will be at your, this is back in the day when stretch limousines were like all the rave.
Oh, that was the thing.
Oh man, stretch limousine was high level, man.
You got that right.
So all of a sudden then she said something, but when I hung up the phone, I was like, did she say what I think? Okay. And she was like, she said something to the effect, I don't remember it verbatim, but she said something to the effect, the car will take you to your plane and something. So I'd never heard anybody say the car takes you to your plane. I heard them say the car takes you to your airport, then the ticket will get you on the plane.
Right.
I never heard them say the car takes you to the plane. So we
private plane, of course.
I get the dog going downstairs to my room. I don't know, it was that weekend or something like that. I get downstairs, all of a sudden, we are in the car, we're driving to the South Bend International Airport, I think it is now. Back then, I think it was a regional airport. And we drive to the airport. We drive past the airport where regular people get out. And all of a sudden, we drive to another part of the property that I'd never even seen before. And they're like, okay, this is where you get out, go through those doors, and the plane will be waiting for you. I was like, oh, snap, a plane will be waiting for me?
Snap.
Because I was thinking,
dang.
First of all.
That's big time. That's big time.
First of all, in my heart, I was like, are they kidnapping me? What is this? Is this the right car? Why am I not stopping at the airport? What's going on here? And I didn't get too concerned because I thought I could take the driver. But then I remember in those James Bond movies, they roll up that back partition, let the gas release in the back of the car. Man, you in trouble after that.
You're worried.
So all of a sudden, walk into the, it wasn't a terminal. I guess it was a terminal. Walk into the terminal, and they were like, hi, Mr. Ismail. Or what? You know, everybody's very formal. And I think I just turned 21, maybe. 20, 21. I'm walking to the terminal, and I'm dressed like I just got back from my class. My doggone, the people are so formal. I'm starting to feel uncomfortable. Like, what's going on? They're like, your plane is waiting for you. I go through the doors. There's like a little red carpet deal. And there is this massive plane on the runway in front of the door, you know, safe distance away.
Yeah.
And on the tail, it has the LA Kings logo. And at the bottom of the steps where you open the door, there's the pilot, co-pilot, and the flight attendant. And nobody else. And so I walk up to him and like, hey, welcome. I was like, wait, where is this?
For
this
me?
How we're getting to Los Angeles? Oh yeah, this is how you get into Los Angeles. Man, I got on that plane. It was just me and them. Food, I've never seen. One of my favorite things about taking my visits to college was that
food.
The food was nonstop, endless. Whatever. So back in the day, for me, the highest ranking food were like steak and lobster because you hear everybody talking about it. So you're like, okay. Man, that plane had everything. It was all different candy bars, all kinds of ice cream, cake pies, lavishness. It was everywhere. So we end up flying to Los Angeles, and I hear his proposition. Long story short, he wants me to come to Canada and be a part of the team there. And
the Argonauts.
Toronto Argonauts. Yeah. Now check this out. And this is where I was really intrigued. He goes, because in that realm, why is my finger in my ear? Lord Jesus, nobody tells you these things while they're taking a picture. It's just take the picture. Anyway, that's me. That might be about 2 or 3 months after, and that was on draft day. Back then.
What a big moment. What a big moment for you.
That could have, the gentleman that's standing next to you, I think he was a part of the party of people. Ownership. It wasn't just McNall.
That's correct. It was
John Candy.
Yes.
John Candy. Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky. Yes, the great one.
You got that right.
Absolutely. And watch this. The guy holding the jersey had a 10% stake in the ownership. And this is what I was going to get to earlier, and this is what he shared. I don't know if we have time. Do we have time?
We got time for you.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, we do.
So he tells me, hey, my circle of friends, other $100 million guys and billion dollar guys, right, are hearing that the NFL wants to expand. Our plan is to put the Argonauts in contention where we can get an NFL team in the CFL. He said, we bought the team, him, Candy, and Brew, Gretzky. Bought the team for $3 million. He said, if we sell it for, if it's value over $3 million, you'll be a 10% owner in whatever that value happens to be.
Not a bad percentage,
I was like, yo, NFL teams back. I mean, even back in the day that were still up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, my contract, he was like, we want to give you a base salary of $4 million. And I was like, how can the CFL pay $4 million? The NFL is barely paying. They were talking about $400,000.
Yeah.
He said.
Yeah, Montana was at $3.75 million, was the most in the NFL.
Man, so he said it'll be a personal services contract with me.
See there?
And I was like, I didn't even know such a thing existed. Yeah. And that right there, he said, to maximize the attention, we'll make the announcement I think he said the day before the draft or the day of the draft, and then he'll be like, wait, what's going on? Like, he knew how to – he was savvy with the media strategies. And next thing you know, on draft day, Rocket Ismail has gone to the Toronto Argonauts.
Wow. Wow.
Choices.
And not to our Cowboys.
Choices.
Now, you know what's crazy? Right. Looking back on it, I think to myself – I probably would have been a Super Bowl champion, but with I probably what three times, four times, what, three,
three
times,
out of
right?
4 years.
Three
yeah, out three out of four.
I probably would have been a Super Bowl champion, but I wonder if from my moral fiber, if I would be the same. And I always, when I think about that, I'm like, I don't know if I would, because my personality when I was younger, I was more of a people pleasing personality instead of like the lead dog, this is how we're gonna do it personality.
Yes, sir.
So I probably would have got caught up in the in the wash and the wave of what was going on then. I don't know if I would have survived.
I think you would have. I do. I you were such a special player. Yes. No, I'm serious. But we got Russell Maryland with the number one.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Excellent.
But you, I mean, be honest, us fans would have loved to have had you, Rocket. And we did have you in 1999.
Yes.
So exciting, you know.
Yes.
And if Michael Irvin doesn't get hurt, I mean, to be honest with you, but I know that's another story. But
yes,
things would have been different. You know, we were 3-0 until he went down. And that big play in 1999 against the Redskins, our hated team, with that overtime champion, or that overtime.
Do we have a video of that, by the way? I think we do. See if we can roll that
this
video.
Was unbelievable moment.
Overtime game. This is the Redskins.
Did they miss
that? We were down.
They dropped it right here. And I think it went into overtime because he failed to get the ball back to his kicker. And Chan Gailey, I forgot that he was your coach.
Play action.
Man.
He's gone.
Look at it, wide open, 10 yards out in front of everybody.
Man, let's hear it, Rocket.
So can I reflect on this game,
yes,
or
sir.
Do I need to
Please.
Stop?
I'm going to play here.
Okay,
again,
so I just want to say this. This is when I was in the huddle, it felt surreal to me because I was like still with the Dallas Cowboys. Everybody that was on the team were still the guys from the Super Bowl years, and the thought process was, man, we're gonna make another push to get to the bowl. So Michael Irvin, like, they had all these big figures on the team, but I finally was able to see what it meant to have someone who's the heart of a team. So
yes,
to
sir.
Your point, Mike,
yeah.
I remember specifically, I think we were down 28-7 or 28-14, something
we're
crazy.
Down by 21, 35-14, I believe, or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember on three specific occasions, we're in a huddle. First of all, I saw something that no team that's going to be successful on the long run, I don't care if you're a football team or a marketing team or a sales team, you're not going to be successful if whatever the vision that the head guy has is not something that everybody, my last name has an L in it, by the way. Is not successful and everybody on the team isn't in line with what his vision is. So I saw chinks in the armor earlier in that game when certain players came in, but I was like, okay, we can overcome that because we had the heart of the team, Michael Irvin. So this is what Mike did. I remember one play. Here's an example. So Mike would came into the huddle. The play comes in from the sideline. Mike was like, Troy. Trap is playing me inside out. What I'm going to do, I'm going to skinny post him. I'm going to make a move to come back. Then I'm going to break out. I'm going to be open.
Mike.
I'm telling you. And Troy must have been used to it. Because he was just he literally was deadpan. Troy was like.
Right, yeah,
it's
Mike. Going in one like ear and out the other.
But watch. Yeah. That particular play was a crucial first down because it was like third and forever.
Yep.
Mike did what he said he was going to do. I saw it on film. He threw the ball. They put Champ Bailey on him because he was a bigger, more athletic body. He got the first down. He beat poor Champ. Didn't have a chance at that. That was his rookie year, though. He threw it to Mike, first down. On that drive, We're now moving. We're in the red zone. Mike does the same thing, but now he's saying it based on what we do red zone pattern wise. Long story short, touchdown. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh, this is what, oh, the heart of a team is the heart. Like, he makes things happen when they need to happen. Like,
nice.
All of a sudden,
nice.
Two more times, he had that
yep.
similar type of conversation, mm-hmm. and the game is tied. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how is this happening? I'm amazed because the closest that I got in the NFL to a Super Bowl was the NFC Championship game when we played in Carolina. Mm-hmm. But being able to be on, whenever you have, for me, in the NFL, when teams have dynasties, like they go on a five-year run, mm-hmm. or maybe a decade type of a run, it feels like yeah. when I'm watching them that I'm watching a mythological, legendary, sure. like right before my eyes moment.
Wow.
But when I was in the huddle, it was so massive and big. And these guys, this is still Troy Aikman. This is still Emmitt Smith. This is still
Emmitt. Oh.
This is still Big E. This is still Larry Allen. This is still Mark Gronowski. Yes. This is still Michael Irvin. This is amazing. I'm in the midst of it. Rocket, this is my, how did I get in this huddle? I don't even like the Cowboys. Like, that was my doggone temperament prior to coming to Dallas. I was a Steelers fan.
Ouch.
So,
wow,
so,
I didn't know that.
So watch this. All of a sudden, I'm there like, oh, this is real. And I knew as long as Michael is on that team and on that field, I don't care. He could cancel out any of the negative energy that guys on the team
yeah.
didn't like about Chan Gailey. And if we really needed something, he could demand that that ball would come to him and he would make it happen. And it's the other thing. Whenever you have teams where you have massive personalities, mm-hmm. some of the personalities are trying to stand out. And what they do to manifest that is they become kind of bullies to guys who don't have that same pedigree on the team. Mm-hmm. Michael Irvin, and this is when I knew the man, he hated bullies. Like, Michael he's the ultimate alpha male to me. And why he's the ultimate alpha male is because he's loving. Watch this. He's loving. He's kind. He doesn't mind falling back if it's necessary for the success of it. But if you're a bully, I don't care who you are. He will step up and try to beat you down. Like, he will protect anybody who's getting bullied. So I find it. I count it such an honor to have been in his presence.
Yes.
And it was very devastating when we went to Philly. To your point, we were like 4-0. We went to Philly, and the doggone play he called a slant gets hit in the head, and he's paralyzed. His doggone career is over. And it was like going into the huddle after he got hurt was like just running a race, and you need to bend over and get some oxygen, but there's no oxygen in the room. And it's a
good analogy.
That's how it felt when Mike went down, and the results, even though we made it to the first round of the playoff, I think wild card game or something like that.
Yeah, man, to St. Louis.
He left
Cardinals.
a massive void.
Yes.
Anyway, yes. I'm not a Michael Irvin apologist. I just love him. And I love that.
Me
I had
too.
That, I had
the playmaker.
I love that I had that experience in my life, so that I know what that standard
is
like.
Right. Well, hey.
And you almost, go ahead, Preston.
You're not the only one. Nathan's one of them that loves Michael. There's a whole bunch of others out there.
Yes, I do.
Feel the same way.
Yes.
About Michael Irvin.
Yes.
And here's the bottom line with that. He loves himself as well.
Oh, he does.
Yes, he does. Tell you right now. I'll love some me.
Man.
He'll tell you that.
Yep.
Man. But this is what I like. That's what I like. This is what I love, because I've had conversations with him in environments where, you know, just because you love yourself on the outside don't mean everything is going good
right.
in your life.
That's right.
And
right.
He, in those environments, when I would have some insight, it was like the ultimate alpha male knows when to humble himself and receive what's necessary to edify them.
He will do that. He will do that. Yep. All right, we need to jump real quickly and get your choices on what the Cowboys might do later on tonight.
Okay.
How do you feel about that? I know Nathan's got some thoughts.
Okay,
about
so
that.
This is my thought, Nathan. You tell me what you think.
Go ahead.
I feel like, offensively anyway, for this to be a successful draft, we need, man, if there's another Ezekiel Elliott type running back, somebody who can be the lead guy and put Tony Pollard back in the position where he was most successful, where he came in for maybe five series a game. And
well, don't have to worry about that now. He's gone.
Oh, he is? Well, I didn't follow. Tell me. They traded him?
Tennessee Titans. Yeah, Titans. The Titans.
Yo. Yeah. So they're trying to get a running back then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
Well, that's where I thought there would be, and that's what I thought would.
How about you, Nathan? What are your thoughts?
You know,
on that?
To be honest, you know, and talk with the Rocket too. It's so fun to talk football with him like this. But to be honest with you, I think we need to go offensive line because we've lost, you know, Tyron Smith. We lost Biadasz, you know, our center Tyler to the Commanders. So we have to, I think, in the first round. We can't. I know we need to try to jump back into the fourth round and try to get a draft choice there. But I think we need to take a center with this pick coming up, specifically Jackson Powers Johnson, somebody from Oregon.
Is that Oregon?
Somebody. Okay. Yes, it is. All right. And somebody where if we had to, we could move Tyler Smith over to left tackle if we had to. He's been there before. But I do not think we can miss right now with the players that we left on that offensive line. I think we have to take the best offensive lineman that we have potential. And to Rocket's point, I think we do have to take a running back. I think maybe we can get them in the third round. I'm looking at somebody like Blake Corum, you know, from Michigan. I'm hoping he looks like
him.
He could be in the third round. I like him. He reminds me of Emmitt Smith a little bit, the way he runs, the way he does. But second round, I think real quickly, we need to get to stop the run. We couldn't stop the run last year. Mm-hmm. So we need to get a linebacker. You know, we also need a one-tech defensive tackle. If we're going to be, to stop that run, we need to do that. And I know people want to trade back and do all these different things, but right now we've lost so many people on the free agency. Eight people, I believe, we lost, which was the third most ever in the Cowboy history. We have to draft for need this year. Sometimes you draft the best player. I think we have to draft for need this year. We've been put in a situation. But Will McClay, the Dallas Cowboys, have been very good at the draft. And people acting like, you know, they're surprised we haven't made a big splash in free agency. We haven't for 10 years. The last time was Carr
that's
with
really
Kansas
nothing
City.
New, is it?
You know, no, it's nothing new. So any of the fans that are surprised, you know, we Jerry and our team, we got to the second overall seed last year in the playoffs. At some point, you know, everybody's blaming Jerry, everybody's blaming Steven, and we have to have our players play a little better too. I mean, you know, get that second overall seed is not easy. To win 12 straight games 3 years in a row isn't easy in the NFL, even though people act like, oh, we just beat bad teams, this and that. I'm not trying to hear that. We won three straight years of 12 wins. But I think we need to go that offensive, that first pick, guys, especially on the offensive line. I mean, maybe offensive tackle if the right one falls to us, but I think we just cannot pass that up.
Bottom line, I think you're both right. We need things in those areas. I like to look at what they need rather than what they might draft.
Okay.
And what they lost. I think Nathan said it was seven or eight guys. I think it's a total of 10 guys that they lost. And four of those guys, maybe even five of those guys are on
the offensive
side. I
think five starters. Yep.
Of the football. Tyron Smith is a huge part of what they
are
going to have to fill in the offseason.
Yes.
They just brought in this kid, Royce Freeman, running back from the Rams.
Okay.
He's a veteran guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ezekiel Elliott's
camp was in yesterday negotiating possible return to the Cowboys.
I don't know if that's a good move. Why would you do that?
I do. Go ahead, Rocket.
Okay.
As a relief pitcher, not as the main guy, though, right?
I don't think so either. I just don't see going back To Ezekiel Elliott. Was he, what, 10 years, 11 years in the game?
Well, I think they let him go real quick, Preston. I think they let him go specifically was that salary cap issue. I mean, we couldn't pay him $18 million for that, you know, 900 yards and things of that nature. But now, at the right price, knowing our system, you know, Dak is very comfortable with him. Those two together have this comfort level that maybe he comes in and maybe with our new, you know, the new potential running back that we could possibly get in third, let Zeke, you know, start it out and do like what, to Rocket's point, have somebody come in like Tony Pollard did when we did have Zeke.
Yes.
So
yes.
I do think that that would be a very, very possible. I think it's something that we need to really look at. If we don't get the right running back in this draft, it's almost something we have to do.
I think they're really going to have to go big. Okay, let me just tell you who they lost. Tony Pollard, Dorrance Armstrong, mm-hmm. Tyler Biadasi, Dante Fowler, Neville Gilmore, Jonathan Hankins. Jonathan Hankins is the only guy that I am glad to see go. I thought he was really lazy. I thought
he got moved around. He
was D-tackle.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, he got moved around in that run game. You're right. He got
he let the Cowboys down big time.
Okay.
In the game. And this kid that they just signed last year, Mozzie Smith, he's going to have to step up. Here's where I believe the Cowboys are going to have to put on weight. Make a move. And it's nothing more than guys that they have on their roster, bring in some guys from the draft. I don't think anybody's going to be able to contribute right away as a rookie. I don't care who it is, running back, defensive lineman, whoever. They're not going to contribute immediately.
Is that because of the position that we have in the draft? Like, there's no first-round guys that
I just think that they have guys on the present roster who are going to have to do one thing, step up, be better.
Yep.
There's a number of guys who have had some experience that are already on the roster. I'm thinking of this JT
TJ Bass. TJ Bass, yes.
This is a good player.
He
was a good draft choice.
Okay. Brock Hoffman, too, experience. I think they're really high.
These are guys, like you're saying, Nathan, these are guys that have some experience, that have a good background, that have to do one thing. You have to step up.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
I get what I'm talking about.
And that's what this ownership is doing now. They're going through the draft, and they are telling their young people, we believe in you. And the fans don't like it. I mean, I hear that. They don't understand it. But this team is based on the draft now. And these people, Will McClay, Stephen Jones, Jerry Jones, they are putting them in situations to play and make an impact. You know, so they are thrusting them in. They've been doing this for 10 years now. So it should not be a shock to people that we're not going out and making huge splashes, because we haven't done it in a long time.
All right, Rocket. Going to reserve the last words on the draft to you, my friend. Go for it.
Wonderful.
We'll close things out.
Well, I feel like the expertise and the spirit of everything is now in order and in harmony in the karma of the Cowboys, because I know Jimmy Johnson is back with the organization in a consulting capacity.
Oh, really?
And that's what I've heard. And maybe it's not public, so maybe I shouldn't have said anything. However, even though all that has taken place,
that is true.
Okay, cool. With all that taking place, I also feel like by honoring him, putting him back in the Ring of Honor last year, spiritually, everything is in order. So I feel like with developing the young guys on the roster and moving forward, this is going to be a deep run in the playoffs with potential Super Bowl consequences.
Let's go. I love it. Way to go, Rocket.
With Jimmy back, the stars are aligned.
Yes.
And with Jimmy, what I mean by that is they are talking again. Jimmy and them are talking. I'm not saying he's going to be in the war room, but they did say that they did talk. They had a long talk afterwards. He gave him his opinion and advice right after, which they did not do for many years. Mm. So that he is in the mix. I'm not saying in the war room, but I do believe there is talks between them.
Well, we hope they get their act together. They're going to need it. It's going to be a critical year for a lot of people. players and coaching staff this year coming up. All right. We want to thank you guys for checking us out again. Episode 3 has now concluded. I want to thank my special guest sitting over here.
Thank you, Rocket.
Nathan,
such a pleasure.
To you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Preston.
You on board again this year. To our producer, Trey Giles, my man.
Thank you, Trey.
Good job again. We appreciate your assistance on this. Make sure you guys tune in to see us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube and Twitter. We will see you
now
guys
X
next week. That's right, X. We will see you X guys next week for episode 4 of the Champions.
Here we go.
And with that, here we go. See you next week.